Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now, live from the NASDAQ market site overlooking New York City's Times Square, I'm Melissa Lear. Traders on the desk are Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Dan Nathan, and Guy Dami. Tonight on Fast, it's a night of deals as Deal or No Deal gets ready to make its debut right here on CNBC. Game show host extraordinaire Howie Mandel will be here to help the traders find some of the best deals in the market. We start with the other big deal hanging in the balance. President Trump and President Xi getting ready to go head-to-head at the G20 meeting to try and find some common ground amid escalating trade tensions. This as contradicting headlines giving investors whiplash again today. Let's get straight to Eamon Javers, who's in Buenos Aires, Argentina, for the developing story. Eamon.
Yeah, hi, Melissa. It's a bit of a game of deal or no deal here in Buenos Aires as well. As we wait for President Trump to land here in Air Force One in just a couple of hours' time, a lot of uncertainty hanging over the diplomats and heads of state who have gathered here in Argentina for this economic summit. Let's look at some of the elements of uncertainty, particularly with auto tariffs. The administration raising the possibility, the president in a tweet, of new tariffs on European automakers. Also the possibility here of tariffs on Chinese autos from Robert Lighthizer, the top trade official for this administration, raising that in a statement last night. There's the idea of a tariff truce. That's something that experts have looked at as the possibility of a step back from a major trade deal. Could they, at least the United States and China, get a tariff truce in which they agree to call off the escalating tariffs and agree to negotiate into next year on a larger deal? And then the other issue that we're going to see is the signing of this new trade deal between the United States, Canada, and Mexico tomorrow. But will the administration be able to get that over the bar on Capitol Hill? We're going to watch for reaction in Washington to that signing tomorrow and see how that's playing politically for the president. So a lot at stake here, and a couple of scheduling change-ups here at the last minute. The president announcing over Twitter while in the air on Air Force One today that he's canceled his meeting with Vladimir Putin. They're rearranging some other meetings as well, downgrading some from formal sit-downs to just what they call hallway grabs between the two leaders. They're ultimately going to lower the number of meetings that the president has, but he is still going to have that dinner with Xi Jinping on Saturday night, and that's the one that everybody's looking forward to, Melissa, because so much at stake here in Argentina.
And key for maybe a lot of the conspiracy theorists out there, Eamon, is that Peter Navarro, the trade hawk, will be present at the dinner. He'll be sitting at the dinner table, right?
That's right. A White House official confirmed that to me today. That is a little bit unexpected because Peter Navarro is seen as the biggest hawk on China in this administration. The Chinese view him as somebody who's working against them inside this administration. So is that a signal that no deal is in the offing here? Or is that a signal that the president simply wants all of his players to be at the table when he does come to some kind of negotiation with Xi Jinping? Not really certain how to read that, but a lot of people are paying attention to it today.
All right, Eamon, thank you. Eamon Javers in Buenos Aires for us. So we start with Guy Dami, and I ask you,
hi, Mel.
Deal or no deal
when
it comes to trade, and what could that mean for the market?
Pandering to our guest, Howie Mandel, sitting in the wings.
This is the question of the market.
And I'm going to answer your question.
Please.
You probably won't like the way I answer, which is typical of our relationship.
Yes,
but I'll say this. I think they'll come out of it with a handshake, and President Trump will say we have an agreement to move forward and we're great friends, and I think that will be enough to make the market go higher. I think President Trump is extraordinarily focused on the stock market. I think he knows in his heart that'll probably make the Dow go up anywhere from 500 to 750 points, and that's probably enough for the next couple weeks as we get into the holidays. That doesn't mean there will be a deal, quite frankly, because I don't think the Chinese want to make a deal, but I think that language will be enough to make the market
rally. So just a handshake? And what? The 10% tariffs don't go to 25% Jan 1?
Is it going to be like an uncomfortably long
handshake?
Like a bro
hug?
Most handshakes are uncomfortable.
More importantly than the quality of the handshake or the length of the duration or the hug or whatever may follow.
It's what we do these days.
Is 10% tariffs that are in place go up to 25%.
I don't believe
those are
so.
Halted.
I think,
the next round
I think
is
it'll
halted.
Be status quo. We had a great conversation. We're agreed to move forward. We both understand each other. All the things you've heard him say before.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I don't think we get that. And I think putting the guy that wrote the book Death by China at the same table of the negotiators, Peter Navarro, is not well liked. And I think there's a message there, frankly. I think both sides are going into this with at least renewed expectations about the other side. I think both guys, you know, the art of the deal, China has been surprised that Trump hasn't been the deal maker that they thought he was going to be. And I think Trump is actually going to stick in that mode. I don't think we have to have a deal. I will go down saying I think the Fed is more important right now to the markets than trade, even though, yes, we know that trade is having an impact on how companies are planning their business.
Doesn't the Fed give him a little bit of cover to come away without a deal and to actually
possibly.
Be tough on trade and play to his base at this point?
Yes, I think all that is true. That gives him some room. I think that Peter Navarro being there actually, I think, might give him some room also in that you don't start the rhetoric that he has had over the last few days if you have no intention of having a deal, right? And we'll find out very shortly, January 1, right, whether there is, in fact, any. I think Guy's right. They'll come out with some sort of handshake and, you know, continue productive discussions on the fine points, which I don't think we'll get any granular detail. But we'll really find out January 1st, do they, in fact, have any constructive dialogue continuing, or are we going to play hardball and implement the tariff increases?
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that we're just talking about this one aspect of our trade relationship with China, and it really is about whether we're going to go from a 10% tariff to 25% in January. That's one component of it. The larger component is this technology transfer, the IP theft, all these things that have actually been in place for decades that are really bipartisan issues here in America. Both sides want to get these things fixed. There will be no deal on that anytime soon, which is why it's important that this thing doesn't escalate on a tit-for-tat trade war on just focused on the trade deficit, right? And so the way I see it is this. I think I think that both of these guys, President Xi and President Trump, do not want to go away from this and not have something to go back and say that we made some progress here. And I don't think it really plays to his base, President Trump, to be overly tough about this. I think the GM news this week showed us that it actually has the potential to work very badly against his base, in particular in places like Ohio, where they're shutting down factories. So to me, I think they do have to come away with some sort of a truce.
I think GM's a sideshow, though. I mean, I think
really?
The bottom
is
line
it, though?
Is, well, yeah, because I think trade tariffs and picking fights with the rest of the world on tariffs, when really the fight was to be with China, is something that's what's backfired, in my view. We have been split up, Dan, so let's make this good. Bottom line, I think that this deal has a major challenge in happening. I agree with what you're saying, Dan, that this is not about, you know, trade neutrality. This is really about control of the 21st century. Therefore, what can each side come back with other than to say, I won? And I'm not sure how you
Twitter
do that for
Twitter bluster
market.
Is really no way to go about making the first win in this thing. You know what I mean? So I really do think that if they can come away, I've heard some people on the networks today, maybe the Chinese say we're going to buy some more soybeans and we're going to delay, the
more
increase
energy
in the tariffs.
Whatever
the heck it is. Like, that would work well for both sides, right? And then you go and you get rid of guys like Navarro. He just can't be at the table anymore, all right? And then you really have to approach this in a manner where we're thinking about the next 10 years, right? And we're thinking about how to fix the last 20 or 30 years problems as it relates to trade.
So what are you saying, though, in terms of there's two different things going on. There's the rhetoric that they come out with and what that does for the market, which is maybe totally separate from what you're talking
Listen,
about.
I think that you guys have all said it. I think there's a really good chance that he comes away like when he left Singapore after meeting President Kim of North Korea, where they think they have some sort of framework to move forward on something, but they really didn't have anything. But at least de-escalated all of the major issues. And I think that's probably what we come out of on Monday.
Think about the trajectory that we're on in terms of trade with China. It continues to get worse, not better. In other words, each time there's escalation, we're actually moving up some stairway to, not heaven. So I think you've got a dynamic here.
How is there continued escalation after the initial round of tariffs were put in place?
Well, I think China, first of all, I'll tell you what.
No other concrete examples. I mean, the administration's officials and China, they are talking ahead of the G20 meeting, right? They have been in conversation. And so isn't it just sort of, it's just been there. There's been no progress, but there hasn't necessarily been an escalation either.
Well, from where we started in March to where we are today on the eve of going to 25%.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm saying, you know, the tactic that Xi Jinping has played with U.S. corporates is to try to engage them, say, we want you there. He's tried to befriend American corporations. And in fact, that's another way this could get a lot worse. China hasn't really put the screws to American corporations yet. And I think that's something that they could do if they want to.
Yeah, but again, and I agree with everything everybody said, but again, it comes down to what happens and then what happens to the market reaction on Monday. And I think, listen, I'm as negative as anybody in terms of what it could mean if there's no deal. And I don't think the Chinese are in really
You're
want
not
to
more
make
negative
a deal.
Than Dan. Hold on.
No, Dan's not. No, you know,
I think I'm being
Dan's
pragmatic here, Tim.
Dan's pragmatic.
Want to double this up?
Pragmatic.
We double it
up. Good word.
Dan knows a lot, doesn't
And as Regis Philbin has often said, Dan knows a lot. But I also think that, again, a handshake, the optics of it will be enough to make the market rally. I think everybody's... I don't think they're going to come away saying there's no room for us to talk. Mm-hmm. Everybody's getting into that corner. World War I trench warfare. I don't think that's happening on Monday.
This is really important because you kind of poo-pooed the whole GM thing. It's not a sideshow. It's really important. I think as we get into 2019 and we start to see the
relative
fiscal...
Relative to China?
Relative to, like, think about this. GM told us this summer that the steel tariffs were going to impact their business. They already told us that, okay?
$1 billion.
And so they waited till the midterms. They made this announcement there. They knew they were going to get blowback from the president here. They met with Kudlow this week. They still have to do this. They have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders. It's a company that went bankrupt 10 years ago. They're you know, like, this is a necessary thing. We're going to start seeing this, I think, probably every week in the early 2019 if the tariffs maintain where they are or they go higher.
So you think that it's the tariffs that caused GM to announce these layoffs?
Listen, I spent the last 2 days
$1 billion
at Credit Suisse's technology conference with all these major CFOs, CEOs of publicly traded companies. Every single conversation spent about 20% of the time talking about the trade situation. The only companies that seem to not care about them are the ones that have these massive secular shifts, like the ones that we've seen
go crazy this week,
like the Salesforce, the SaaS guys.
The GM story to me is about a company that no longer that sees actually very clearly that a core business in the sedan business, for example,
they
is worth scrapping.
They don't make money.
They sell pickup trucks.
The cost,
they want to realign their business. That to me is what's going on.
I think one thing that's going on.
GM
had record profits.
Let me just ask Dan, do you think it gives them cover to do this kind of, to close plants and others will follow? Is that point of what you're saying?
Here's the thing. I just listened to 20 semiconductor companies that sell into industrial space. They sell into autos. They're telling you they have no visibility because these other businesses are being massively impacted by this right now. So it is important. So you can say that GM had record profits. They've been shutting down plants for years now. They've been firing people for years now.
All right, we'll do this in another time.
Our next guest has been a relentless bull all year through sell-offs and says the rally may have been reactivated. Let's bring in Scott Wren, the senior global equity strategist at Wells Fargo. He joins us from Palm Springs, California. Looks nice where you are, Scott.
Really nice
to see you.
You know, Melissa, it's a little bit warmer than St. Louis. It's a touch below 70, and the locals are breaking out their fur coats, believe it or not.
Oh, we're happy for you, Scott. All right, let's talk about the markets. Let's say there is no deal in G20. What happens to this Santa Claus rally that we've gotten sort of a little bit of a preview of?
I think that we need to see something slightly positive. I'm with Guy on this one. It's not going to take much. A good handshake, a little bit more than that, and I think the market's going to like it. You know, the two biggest events, at least in our opinion, that's going to determine what happens between now and the end of the year is the Fed meeting and this G20 meeting between Xi and Trump. And clearly, yesterday, Jay Powell set the table for what's likely to happen at this FOMC meeting, and that's a more dovish tone. That's what the market wants to see. The market clearly liked that. And I think there's a reasonably good chance that we see just a slight positive between the meeting with these two leaders.
So in the FOMC minutes that were released today, Scott, trade and or tariffs were mentioned about a dozen times in the minutes, which were short by the standard of typical minutes released after a meeting. So I'm wondering, you know, if you think that perhaps there is a Powell put when it comes to the tariffs, and that may give the president more cover to be tougher on trade, actually, and to let the tariffs go from 10 to 25% or consider putting new tariffs on, because the Fed has essentially said, we're paying attention to this and the impact on the economy.
Well, I think the administration wants to see some progress here, and you know, a handshake right now is fine. You know, there's a lot of discussions going on in the background. Navarro's going to be there, and he tends to obviously be pretty tough. But I think that eventually we're going to see some positives out of this trade deal with China, but that's going to take some time. I mean, this is not Canada and Mexico. Those deals were pretty easy to negotiate. This is not, you know, the EU's going to be tough. China's going to be tough, but we do not expect an all-out trade war. We're having a skirmish right now, but you know, I'm not expecting 50-60% tariffs across all products. That's what we would consider a trade war. So over time, and you know, maybe it is somewhere in 2019, we see a more solid deal with China, but I think there's a reasonably good chance that we see some positive out of this meeting on Saturday night, out of this dinner, and I think the market's going to like it.
So under that scenario, Scott, which sectors would you want to be in?
Well, for us, you know, we continue to think this expansion still has some legs. We want to be in financials, industrials, consumer discretionary, healthcare. We've liked all those for a while. We don't want our clients hiding in things like utilities and staples and things like that. We just, as a matter of fact, today we upgraded technology. It's underperformed the S&P 500 by 400 or 500 basis points here since the S&P's record high in September. So we upgraded that. We think that looks favorable as well. So, you know, we're leaning towards those companies that we think are going to benefit from a continuation of the expansion.
Got it. Scott, thanks. Scott Wren.
Thanks, guys.
Joining us from Palm Springs. All right. So, Guy,
yes.
We're here.
Look, this is not a political comment. There's a lot of noise around the administration over the last week or so. That's just fact. President Trump views winning. One of his big wins is the stock market going higher. That's fact. He said it himself. So anything that he can do to make the market go higher next week in the form of a handshake without an agreement, I think he'll do, which is why I think that's why you'll see a handshake. We have something in place. Market rallies on Monday.
Coming up, a wild day for Twitter. The stock sinking as much as 8% on a flurry of headlines. What is wrong with the social media stock? We will explain. Plus, Dow on track for its best week in 2 years, but a handful of Dow stocks are still stuck in bear country. So will the traders say deal or no deal on these beaten down stocks? And the one and only Howie Mandel, the host of the new season of Deal or No Deal right here on CNBC, is here. And he will help the traders find some of the best deals in the market. We are live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Twitter in turmoil today with the stock falling more than 8% at the very lows of the session. Julia Borson's in Los Angeles with more on what is behind the move. Hey, Julia.
Hey, Melissa. Well, at the lowest levels of the day, Twitter shares were down nearly 9%. They ended up ending the day down about 4% after a very volatile session. Now, the stock making this move, despite the fact that there was no fundamental news out about the company, but it does come after late yesterday, Twitter suspended a fake account impersonating Russian President Vladimir Putin. That account had gone undetected for 6 years and had about 1 million followers. Twitter saying it received a report about the account from Russian officials, tweeting a link to its impersonation policy. The move also comes after a Politico article out last night noted that Fox News has not tweeted since November 8th in an apparent boycott over Twitter's handling of protesters posting the address of its host, Tucker Carlson, on the Twitter platform. Wedbush's Michael Pachter telling us that the call out of the silent boycott would spook some investors. And it's worth noting it has been a volatile year for Twitter. Stock is up 30% year to date, but down 34% from highs in mid-June. falling into bear market territory. And other social media names are also in bear market territory. Facebook is down 36% from a high on July 25th. Snap is down 70% from a high in early February. Now, as for Twitter, analysts are pretty split on the stock. According to FactSet, there are 10 buys, 21 holds, and 7 sell or underweight ratings. Melissa, back over to you.
Okay, thanks so much, Julia Boorstin. All right, Dan, so what this sort of underscores is this notion that Twitter may have a fake user problem.
So obviously it does.
And that there may need to be policing in terms of the bullying that happens
on this
platform.
So I think there's a couple of really important issues here. You know, since they said that they were going to start suspending accounts and looking at this problem, I think it was back in the summer, you know, President Trump's, his user count has only gone up. And that's just absolutely impossible when you think about that. So they're really not even touching him right now. Here's the biggest issue they have right now. They lost 9 million monthly active users in the quarter that they just reported about a month ago. They guided to a decline of 5 million in the current quarter. So they are losing users. If they get serious on this fake account issue, it's going to be a much lower number than their 326 million. So they're not growing anymore. So they have to better monetize the users that they have. The problem is that the service isn't really enjoyable to use anymore. It's just not, other than Guy live tweeting everything he does. I don't know about you guys.
I don't understand what that means. Why is it less enjoyable now than it was a year
ago? Because of the trolls?
Yeah. Let's be frank. And then the other issue, though, is what did they say? They cited they lost users in Europe because of GDPR, because
right.
of regulation.
And if that
so if that happens here, they're toast.
Okay, how about this boycott, though? I mean, Fox News has 18-plus million followers, and for all those people who might think that the boycott may not be consequential, I mean, look what happened with a boycott of the NFL. I mean, if conservatives sort of fire up against Twitter for whatever reason, could this be consequential for a platform that's already suffering from declining usage patterns?
Yeah, well, the answer is clearly yes. But and I've said this before, and I'm not suggesting I'm right, but one of the things I've said for the last couple of years is they use the wrong metrics. Twitter should never talk about daily active users, monthly active users. I don't think it's about that at all. The fact that they've gone down that route now, they've pigeonholed themselves, but Google doesn't talk about daily active users or monthly active users. It's the wrong metric for the company. With that said, it doesn't matter because they do. I think the stock probably trades with a 28 handle soon.
It's interesting to me, 50 million shares traded today. That's an extremely high number on unclear news. Right. I don't know, it makes me think there's a giant seller. I don't know who that would be.
Right. I just the metric that matters is international ag growth and domestic ag growth, which are growing at 30%.
All right. For more on tech stocks in turmoil, head on over to tradingnation.cnbc.com. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, first in business worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on the show.
Deal or No Deal is making a comeback right here on CNBC. But before the big debut, Guy Adami will take his shot at finding some of the best deals in the market with the help of superstar host Howie Mandel, right here on Fast Money after this short break.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. The Dow on track for its best week in 2 years as we get ready to wrap up another wild month for the markets. Bob Pisani's at the New York Stock Exchange with more on that. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Melissa. You know, it's been a wild month for the Dow. The Dow is up almost 1% or 220 points this month. That doesn't really tell the story. That's nothing. The Dow has traded in a 2,000-point range this month. That's about an 8% from the high to the low. But despite a modest rebound, there's been a lot of damage done. So take a look here. There's six Dow stocks, Goldman, IBM, DuPont, Caterpillar, Apple, 3M. They're all in bear market territory, down 20% from their 52-week highs. And there's nine other components, including Home Depot, and Intel that are in correction territory, 10 to 20% off their 52-week highs. Now, that means half of the Dow is either in correction or bear market territory. Now, much of this damage did not just occur this month. The bank stocks like J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Goldman, they all peaked way back in March. They've been weaker as rates have stalled out and loan growth has been fairly anemic. Really, it's the same story with the industrials and the materials like Caterpillar and 3M and Dow DuPont. They all peaked essentially in the first quarter, and they began dropping on trade concerns many, many months ago. But big cap growth tech names like Apple and Microsoft, Cisco, they all held up really well. They were the big market movers going into the fourth quarter, and that's when they started encountering big problems right at the beginning of October. All of Apple's decline has occurred since October 1st. Microsoft, by the way, which briefly passed Apple as the largest company in the S&P 500, dropped 13% this quarter as well. But it staged a remarkable comeback in the last seven, eight trading days. It's now down only 3% for the quarter. Melissa, we're about to start the NYSE Christmas party, and I wish all you guys were down here with me. Maybe next year you can come down here.
All right. Well, enjoy,
Bob. A celebration with us. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob Pisani at the NYSE. So given all these moves, we thought it would be the perfect time to play a little Deal or No Deal. And who better to do that than the Deal or No Deal host and executive producer himself, Howie Mandel. Welcome, Howie, to the show. We want to go through the rules here. Here's how it's going to work. Guy over there, he's going to be the contestant for today. You see, he's with Howie. Each of the traders here on the desk will hold up a case. Guy will pick the trader, and they will reveal the stock and its closing price. And then Guy will decide if it is a deal, meaning a buy at the current levels, or no deal, meaning it's got more room to fall. All right, everybody got the rules, set with their cases. Howie, take it away.
Take it away. You just explained everything. The idea is for me to explain. So did you hear what she said?
Yeah, but I'm not that bright, Howie. Can you just give
me one? Did you not understand? So there are, they got three cases. Yeah. Each of those cases is holding the name of a stock. I'm going to ask you deal. I'm first going to ask you to pick a case. I'm going to say deal or no deal. You're going to tell us whether it's a deal, whether we should buy it, or is it still going down at no deal. You ready?
Got it. By the way, before we start,
yeah.
Happy birthday. You know, we've had monarchs, kings, heads of state.
Right.
You're Howie Mandel.
I know.
I mean, you found out. You're the biggest star we've ever had. Well, I'm just saying.
Is that a compliment to me, or am I doing
it's an indictment of the show.
It doesn't matter.
Ding, ding,
I guess
ding.
I'm the real deal. Okay. So normally I'd interview you, but they all know you.
Yeah, well, of course.
But I'm going to tell you to pick a case. There are three cases. Look at our lovely models today. Pick a case. Pick a number.
Help me, Howie, please. It's so hard to pick between the three. Just help me to pick one, please. I'm asking you.
Are you serious? Is that
no, I'm
acting?
Not. I'm not really.
Oh, I smell Emmy here.
Can I pick?
You guys have been. I just got here. You've been practicing all day. You know what case you're going to pick.
Well, I want to pick Karen. Karen's my always been my favorite. Karen.
Yes.
Karen, you're
open your case.
Wait.
Oh,
I'm the host. Why am I even here?
I don't know, Howie.
That's why I'm the most important guest you've ever had on the show. No, you already said. Listen to him, Karen. You work with him. I'm going to be gone tomorrow. Go ahead. He said open the case. Open your case. It's Apple.
Ooh.
So I'm going to ask you. So Apple closed, I think it says 179.55, right?
Mm-hmm.
Deal or no deal?
It's so hard for me to pick. Deal. I'm going to say deal. And this is why I'm going to say deal. Listen, I've been wrong on this stock for quite some time, Howie. You watch the show, so you know.
I do.
But the other day, President Trump tweeted about Apple. And if you go back and look, he tweeted about Boeing. After that, the stock went straight up. Lockheed Martin, the same thing. And the same thing happened with what? Pfizer. So
I
say deal.
He's tweeted about Rosie O'Donnell. I don't see her anywhere.
Excellent point
okay,
by you.
All right.
So deal.
Oh, deal. Okay, so buy. I'm going to buy. I'm talking to people like
but
I have
gotta,
people.
But you got to hear from the other traders.
Why don't we find out what the other traders think?
Okay. The next one, you got to pick a case, right?
No, you got to, Tim's got to, so what does
oh,
Tim say?
Who's Tim?
Tim is over at the desk.
Hi. Oh, there you are. What are you going to say? Deal.
Deal, Howie. I tell you what, I love Apple here. Deal.
Okay, this is so different than the real game.
Well, you just, now you have to
I'm so confused.
Ask Karen, what she wants to do.
Karen,
this,
what do you want to do?
This will make the real game show look even better.
That's the beauty of your
this is part of the ad.
It
okay,
is.
Karen,
right.
What do you
what
say?
Deal or no deal?
Deal, I mean, I own it, so I better want deal. So I own it. I think the valuation here is attractive. I understand the headwinds here, but ultimately, I'm a value girl.
Nice. Yes, that's what everybody says.
Dan.
Yeah, so Dan. I'm a deal level here, but I think you're actually going to have to start working in dollar cost averaging on this thing. I think it has lower lows, but I think this is where you want to start dealing this name.
You know what I noticed here? Consistency. No. Everybody is in this in line.
Consistency is a moving target, though, as you know.
I do know that. Yeah. I've always said that. And people say, why are you saying that? Just get out of the elevator.
Let's do.
Anyway, it's time to pick your second case.
Well, you know, it's hard for me to pick Dan and Tim. Dan, please.
Sure.
Okay, open. Doesn't matter. Sorry. Have you guys seen
no,
the show?
No, I don't know what to tell you. Okay. It's like working with babies and animals.
And so, deal or no deal?
In this case, Helen, I'm glad you asked. No deal. I think this Malaysia thing's a big deal. I think the headlines are going to get worse. I think the stock goes down. And you can see the chart we have here. This is not attractive. I mean, that's not good. You see the way that sucker goes straight down? No deal.
Wow. I'm like the Vanna White of NASDAQ now. Okay, no deal. And what do you guys think? Who goes first?
No deal, Tim. Howie. Tim. Bottom line is, if guy doesn't like Goldman Sachs, I don't like Goldman Sachs. No deal.
No deal. Okay, Karen.
Yeah, I'm going to go against the grain here, and I'm going to say deal. I mean, wow. This is a premier franchise that we know it's sitting right near book, which is amazing. The valuation here on a PE basis is ridiculously low. It has priced in a gigantic penalty from the Malaysia situation already.
And Dan?
Yeah, so I'm no deal, Howie. And I just think that it's actually pricing in a much more challenging 2019 environment, and I think it's a value trap. I don't understand the reasons why Karen likes it. I just don't see any catalyst into the new year, so I'm no deal.
Oh, wow. So there's a little, not everybody's consistent. No. But you said that's good when they're not. Okay. Do you agree with everybody?
Sometimes consistency is a moving target. Other times, you know, you never know.
You never know.
I like everybody. So.
Okay. It's time you pick your last case.
Well, there's only one left.
Howie, I'm only listening to you, by the way.
So I'm going to wait. open the case.
And I'm going to wait.
Woo! Caterpillar. It's trading at, I can't see it, 130.23 today. It's 30 seconds on the clock. Deal or no deal?
Now, you've been watching the show, and you heard me say that I think there's a chance that President Trump and President Xi, after this weekend, come out arms around each other. You know, we have a thing for a deal going forward. If that happens, Caterpillar's going to rally hard. So, Howie, I say deal.
Wow. So let's find out what everybody else. They're going to have arms around each other?
Spooning. I believe so.
Spooning.
Yeah.
I think that would be great.
Be
a
tragic.
Chinese spoon deal.
I'm not spooning Dan.
Oh, you're saying no deal. You're going with him.
Yeah, no deal, Howie. Look, bottom line here is if the global growth is slowing, Caterpillar's going to be right in the line of that slower growth. No deal. Don't like the valuation.
Okay, Karen?
Yeah, I'm going to say deal. If you look at the chart, it started trading down when tariffs got going. I agree with Guy's analysis. They come out hugging, whatever, however, in whatever way they choose to show affection, which is fine. I think the stock rallies.
And Dan?
Yeah, so Howie, I think no deal here for a lot of the reasons that Tim cited. And so here's a stock that's down 17%. Again, like Goldman, I think it's actually telling us what the 2019 global economy is going to look like here.
Wow. Is it just me or is Karen a rebel?
Without a cause.
Every single day, Howard.
And the smartest one on the desk. Money. Oh, did I say that or did I think that in my head? Why don't you guys come on over?
Howie.
Come on over.
I don't want to.
Wow.
Wow, look.
That was
at the desk.
Fun.
Was it?
Not so much for you, huh?
No. It was a lot of fun. But I want to say,
which is awesome.
The show, which premieres on this network next Wednesday,
a lot better.
Is an emotional roller coaster. It is. You will scream. You will yell. I didn't hear any of that here. And for the first time in a long time, you guys have a full audience, and they were just sitting there silent. So, but it's good. If you want to see something so much better than you just saw, tune in.
It's really not that hard to do that. Yeah. So that's not a. That's
the just don't have God in your first show.
I would.
I'm just kidding.
Why do you think it's such an emotional roller coaster?
Because I think
whether or not you go with the figure, the dollar figure in the case.
Because I think that the truth of the matter is exactly what makes this show so good, your show so good, is that the people that are watching it relate to what am I going to do? Should I buy? Should I gamble? It's risk versus reward. It's exactly everything that this show and this network is all about. And you could sit there. It's teaching moments. You could sit there with your kids. So when you see people taking a deal that they shouldn't take or saying no deal when they're turning down $250,000, which could change their life, you're screaming. It's very visceral. You're screaming at the TV. It's a great entertainment roller coaster with a lot of takeaway. And we're going to premiere with a holiday special on Monday night, right after The Voice on NBC. Big holiday $1 million special.
We have to tune into that for sure.
Awesome. Yes,
in terms of the decision-making process as to whether or not to go with a deal or turn it down and wait for the better deal? I mean, a lot of that also happens in the stock market with stocks. Do you buy at this price? Do you wait till tomorrow and get a better deal on that stock because it's going to be 10% lower or whatever? Do you trade? I mean, does that fascinate you? I mean, if this decision, if this
I
process
am the biggest
on Deal or No Deal
in the world,
you?
I can't, because I can't, and that's what makes it hard for me, even as a host of Deal or No Deal. I don't have, I'm risk adverse.
Oh, you are?
Very. So, like,
you don't have what? Sound like you're going to say something else.
The guts or whatever
okay,
it takes
guts.
To put
Huevos.
Something.
Huevos.
I don't have eggs. Yeah. I don't have any eggs. So the thing is, that was too much information.
Like, depends on what you mean by eggs. But yeah,
well,
go ahead.
Well, the people are saying, Caitlin looks different on this network. Anyway, the thing is that what I'm saying is that, no, I have and I do and I invest, but not I'm not really in the market. But it's risk versus, I don't have any risk. And people are so funny because I'll offer somebody who said they've never owned a home and the banker says she'll give you $250,000 right now. You've been there for 15 minutes. And yeah. It's very easy for people, some people, and I'm sure a lot of your viewers, to go, no deal, because they see that $1 million looming. And when are you going to ever have that opportunity? And, you know, it's kind of like when you see Apple drop a little bit. Right. You go, I'm all in because it's going up, you know, or do you wait and hold, you know, but people who go all in right there, those are the kind of people that you see playing the game.
Do you follow up with the people who win big money?
Yes.
Is it like the curse of the lottery? I mean, do you find them like homeless a year later and they lost their
so negative.
I'm curious.
No, we have no homeless contestants.
Oftentimes you get a big windfall and you see that with whether it be, you know, a lottery winner or maybe a professional football player.
The one
you
I
have
do
a lot of money and there's no knowledge in terms of how to preserve that money.
The very first game that was ever played. I've done it 500 games I've played and done and recorded. The very first game in 2005 was a young lady named Karen Van who told us she's never owned a home, she didn't have insurance, she had three kids. And she played a little harder than I would have played, but she walked out of there and still, when you think of any game, with $5,000, you know? And she lives someplace in middle America. $5,000 would, you know, buy insurance, buy something. And we followed up a year later. And she had breast augmentation. So things were looking up.
Literally.
Not sure what the lesson of that story was. But
I don't think there is a lesson.
Story. I'm glad
and
she's
on that,
okay with bigger breasts.
Okay. Spend money.
Well.
Howie Mandel, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're
happy
welcome
birthday.
Here anytime.
Oh, thank you.
And happy birthday.
From the Rebel.
By the way,
yes.
By the way, happy birthday. This is from all of us at
Fast
CBC.
Money gift bag.
Really?
Yes.
From all of you.
From all of us.
You guys are such sports.
I know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Something you bought right here on an employee discount. Do you want me to open it now or do I take it home?
I think
you have to. I have to open it?
Be rude not to.
I don't know. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. It's a Fast Money. You guys.
Maybe a thermos?
We're thinking. Oh, my gosh.
Everybody drinks water.
Oh, my God. Does somebody have a tissue? I mean, this is. You guys. Oh, my God.
Take a minute.
Thank you, Howie. Thanks, Howie. Enjoy.
Yeah.
All right. Be sure to tune into the big premiere night of Deal or No Deal, Wednesday, December 5th, kicking off at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You will not want to miss it. Coming up, we told you about all the Dow downers, but next we'll tell you about one big winner. This Dow darling is hitting an all-time high today. We'll tell you the name and why shareholders are so excited. And later, Bitcoin hanging above 4,000 bucks after what's been a wild couple of weeks. But UBS says Bitcoin is over, it's dead, it's not coming back. The man behind that bold call will be here. More Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. McDonald's sizzling to fresh all-time highs today. This following a vote of confidence from Morgan Stanley. It upgraded the stock, raised its price target to $2.10 from $1.73. Investors have also been digging into the broader fast food space. In the past month, shares of Jack in the Box up 16%, Starbucks up 15%, while Chipotle and McDonald's both higher by more than 9% in the past month. So is now the time to get into some of these fast food names? Guy Dominey.
Well, McDonald's, people will say valuation is extended, but they've said it for a while. And kudos to Tim, who a couple years ago when the stock was meandering around $105, went out and did a thing with those kiosks. Remember, he said it's a technology play. Now, I follow you on Twitter, by the way, and this is, I'm getting off topic, but you tweeted something today that actually.
It's actually right on topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the Morgan Stanley upgrade had to do with the modernization efforts at McDonald's, and part of that is, ordering by touchscreen on kiosk. And what did one study find on kiosks in the UK?
There was some nasty
stuff. All of them had feces.
Okay, you know, you have to say that. People I wasn't going to say
this
that.
This is a PSA. This is for people's good health. Right, Sam?
I don't know why we're going to me on this, other than I have used those kiosks, but I washed my hands before I had my meal.
Look, how about after? Oh, yeah, before you had your meal. Before you use a kiosk, too?
Yeah, look, I'm washing my hands all day long, Mel. But look at me there. Yeah, just very happily ordering away.
Swiping the
McDonald's has done a couple things. They've gotten hip. They've become, at least they have organic meat. They actually have fresh beef. They've done things with the kiosk. They've made it a little hipper. They understand the global brand, and they've refranchised. This stock is going higher.
In an environment where the consumer seems strong because retail is strong, Karen,
right?
Does it make these stocks more attractive?
Well, one of the things that have really been hurting these stocks is labor, right? So for them, that $15 minimum wage in a lot of states, that really hurts them. I mean, to me, it was interesting if there's something to the Jack in the Box story about
it going private.
It going private. Right. I don't know. That's sort of an interesting catalyst to me.
Yeah.
I think it's a big franchise. I don't know. It could go for, it's already expensive, but I think there's some juice left.
Let's stick with the consumer here. Talk about Nordstrom dropping 4% today. Options traders think it's only getting worse from here. Dan, what's
your reaction? Interesting one. Guy's written this one down for the last month, down about 25% on that disappointing result a couple weeks ago. I'm kidding. I know that
actually,
you were thinking about
it.
On Monday, he said, I think it's time to take a shot on this one.
I said that.
Okay, so I listened to you.
All right, here's the deal.
Obviously, bad results, bad guidance. The stock's still up 10% of the year. There was a trade today that was kind of interesting, and sometimes at this time of the year, you start thinking about how are people positioning in names they kind of want to hold on to. Put volume is three times that of calls. There was one trade when the stock was trading at 53.30, caught my eye. It was a buyer of 2,500 of the January 50 puts, paying $1.46 for those. Those break even at 48.54 on January expiration. Down about 9%. So the reason I bring that up is look at that chart right there. 50 seems to be kind of a level. If you own this stock, you're still up 10% of the year. Let's say you came in on the year. You may be looking for some protection at a key support level, and that would lock in maybe a sort of unchanged point of the year. Again, these companies are not going to report, a lot of these retailers, until February. So will we see some pre-announcements? We know it's going to be a very promotional holiday selling season. But to me, this kind of smacks of some protection rather than an outright bear.
Well, it's interesting to me how out of the money the protection was, considering there is no news. You
no
can
catalyst.
See that as a catalyst. I mean, so they got to come. That's a pretty bold bet that things are going to be bad in general and specifically bad for them because they're not trading at a crazy price.
Sure.
For more options action, you can check out the full show tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Coming up, just like Brutus said about Julius Caesar, is it time to bury Bitcoin and not praise it? Well, not quite, but UBS came out with a note saying just that. The man behind the call will be here. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. It's been a wild ride for Bitcoin this month and this year. The cryptocurrency going from the highs near $20,000 to the lows near $3,000. And our next guest says the crypto craze is over. Borrowing a line from William Shakespeare in his latest scathing note titled, I Come to Bury Bitcoin, Not to Praise It. The author of that piece, UBS's global chief economist, Paul Donovan, joins us now on the Fast Line. Paul, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Were you always a Bitcoin skeptic? I mean, were you just waiting for this moment in time where a bubble would seem to pop and then you can pop this note out to bury Bitcoin?
To be perfectly honest, I think anyone with a high school education in economics has been a Bitcoin skeptic right from the start. These things were never going to be currencies. They're not going to be currencies at any point in the future. They're fatally flawed. And as a result, I think right from the start of the hype in late last year, it was fairly obvious that this was going to end badly. Unfortunately, for some of the people who weren't protected by any kind of regulation and got sucked into the process.
So all those people, the people who used to come from banks like UBS and went to start their own crypto funds, all those people are just, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you're calling them stupid, that they couldn't see that this whole thing was just a false narrative from the start.
Well, I mean, the problem with any bubble is that it tends to come about when there is something innovative, something new in terms of technology, and it allows that dread phrase, this time it's different, to be uttered. And of course, that's exactly what we have with the cryptocurrencies. There were a lot of people who perhaps didn't fully comprehend what was going on with quantitative policy and thought that printing money would create hyperinflation, in spite of the fact that printing money doesn't create inflation at all. It's printing too much money that's the problem. And so we had a lot of confusion over this and concerns, and so you get this hype coming out. Now, the underlying technology of blockchain, the distributed ledger system, that's different. I mean, there's an economic proposition there. Again, there's a certain amount of hype around it. But to go from that into, you know, Bitcoin is going to replace the dollar is quite a leap.
Is there no use case for Bitcoin? Because even the St. Louis Fed has a white paper out saying that in economies and in societies where corruption in the government is rampant and there is severe devaluation of the currencies, there might be a use case for cryptocurrencies.
Well, I think if you're looking at a situation where government ceases to exist, to all intents and purposes, that does help remove one of the main obstacles, which is you can't pay taxes in Bitcoin. Some people claim that you can in various locations, but you can't. You pay it in the currency of the government, and they may offer you a deal where you can convert your Bitcoin at a very disadvantageous exchange rate. So if you don't have a government, then society gets a little bit more anarchic, and in that situation, something like a cryptocurrency does still come through. But the main problem with these things, the absolute fundamental flaw, is that they're never going to be a store of value. Okay. Every economist knows the store of value is about balancing supply and demand. Mm-hmm. And with cryptocurrencies, you cannot control the supply in response to a drop in demand.
Okay. Paul, thanks so much for phoning in. Provocative note, I'm sure you know.
Thank
Paul
you.
Donovan, UBS's global chief economist. By the way, Ohio just announced that it is accepting Bitcoin for tax payments. So there is one example of that out there. Dan, what do you say to this?
Listen, you know, he's right right now. You know what I mean? So some of the pillars of the bull case, the store of value, the scarcity, those things.
It was never a store of value.
Well, I know, but
I don't think you're saying that.
What I'm saying is, but that was one of the core, bull
cases. Yeah.
And it's kind of out the window at this moment. But, you know, is gold a store of value? I mean, like, you know, is it? But there's an ecosystem around it. And I think that's the moment. Important thing about Bitcoin right now is that it is the first popularized distributed ledger use case right now. You know what I mean? And so that has the potential to kind of grow back into some other use cases, in my opinion.
Up next, final trades. Time for the final trade. Let's start with Tim. What's your final trade,
Tim?
Oil
services has been beaten up. Halliburton.
Karen.
Yes, I'm going to go with EM, emerging markets. I think no longer we're not the place to be, and dollars moving the right way for them.
Dan.
Box. They just put up a pretty decent quarter, decent guidance. I think this thing's trying to bottom here. I think it's a buy.
Guy.
Not that I need to say this, but it's pretty clear that Howie and I didn't rehearse that. That was not
what?
Rehearsed.
Very clear.
I don't.
Really?
Crystal.
But wasn't he a good sport to come on CNBC's
consummate
Fast Money?
Consummate professional. And I cannot wait until Deal or No Deal premieres on CNBC next week.
Deal. We played it.
Or no deal.
Exactly. Final trade.
There might be a deal in Eli Lilly there, sister.
That does it for us here on Fast. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more. Meantime, Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.